98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Weekly Blast.
The Cardinals have an opportunity to get greedy. They have been gifted a week three layup of a football game against a rookie quarterback and a rookie head coach, a wonderful chance to improve to 3-0 in a pivotal season. It's also a great opportunity for Cliff Kingsbury, because at this point in time, it's Urban Meyer who is considered the NFL coach in over his head. It started with his training camp invite to Tim Tebow. It continued with reports that he was ready to peace out of Jacksonville, maybe even take the USC job. And now that the Jaguars are 0-2, he's telling fans, quote, "They will break this rock." Sounds like something you'd hear in college, doesn't it? Now, Kingsbury won't say as much, but I'll bet it would do wonders for his own confidence to beat a guy like Urban Meyer, who was a titan in the world of college football while Kingsbury was trying to stay afloat at Texas Tech. It would also bolster Cliff's credibility. Last season, Kingsbury's squad squandered a 2-0 start with losses to Detroit and Carolina. They were 6-3 and collapsed down the stretch. And in his rookie season, his team fought back to 500, only to lose six consecutive games. So yes, this is a big test, not just for the Cardinals, for Kingsbury's ability to deliver a highly focused, motivated, hungry team in the face of prosperity. All right, today's Bickley Blast brought to you by my great friends at Chapman BMW. Test drive the ultimate driving machine at Chapman BMW in Chandler, at Chapman BMW on Camelback. Shop online at chapmanbmw.com.
Hadn't really thought of this matchup that way. A battle of coaches who not too long ago were in college.
Mm-hmm.
4 years ago, they were both, maybe 3 years ago, they were both in college.
Yes, they were. Cliff Kingsbury had a 6 year, was it 6 years? Yeah, 6 years at Texas Tech, and Urban Meyer checked out of Ohio State in 2019 before the 2019 season. I think that's right. Yeah, and at the time when that happened, Urban Meyer was one of the kings of college football. He, Nick Saban, Dabo Swinney, it was all kind of there at the top. And Cliff Kingsbury was the guy fired by his own alma mater. I went back and did some research on this, and I ran across a story in Texas Monthly Magazine written by a guy who was astounded that Cliff Kingsbury had fallen up to USC and then up to the Cardinals. And it just reminded of how out of the box this hire was when it happened, and how at the time, because it wasn't just the Cardinals hiring Cliff Kingsbury, it was the Jets also being interested in Cliff Kingsbury, and the Cardinals worrying, and some fans worrying, are we going to lose this guy?
Yeah, I remember the stories coming out of New York where the Jets didn't want to let him leave the facility.
That's right, and it was all because of the who is the hot new offensive-minded guy that we can poach to be the next Sean McVay.
Well, this was coming off the Rams Super Bowl
it was.
Run.
Yes.
With all due respect to Cliff Kingsbury, had the Jets held him hostage, he'd be unemployed right now.
That's well said.
Or a coordinator somewhere.
That's true. That's fair.
That's more a knock on the Jets than it is Cliff Kingsbury.
No, I agree with that. And so I think that this year Cliff's already done some good stuff in restoring his credibility. There's obviously still issues with penalties and clock management and all that kind of stuff. There's much bigger arching questions about the leadership on this team and how much of a real head coach kind of figure you need in the NFL. There are questions as to whether or not the Cardinals can be good in the second half of a season, because this has been one of Cliff Kingsbury's struggles dating all the way back to college. Teams that get figured out and solved and beaten in the second half of seasons. But for the moment, he's 2-0 in a season in which he was on the hottest seat in football.
And for the moment, the one that is on the hot seat is one of the most successful college coaches of all time that's only two games into his NFL career.
Is it fair to say he's on the hot seat? I don't think so. There's speculation about his future, but only because of what's bubbling in college football. I don't think anybody in Jacksonville is dissatisfied with what Urban Meyer has done. They might be dissatisfied with, all right, early on we're dealing with college rumors, you know, two games
and the Tim Tebow thing left a mark on him.
Well, not only that, the strength coach thing, he's mishandled a lot already, and he's, you know, finding out how different pro football is from a coaching standpoint than college, and at the heart of that, The Jacksonville Jaguars have two losses. Urban Meyer coached 17 years of college football as a head coach and had two or less losses in 12 of those 17 years. This is brand new territory for him, and it might be too much to overcome.
Yeah. Urban Meyer is the kind of guy, though, that a guy like Pete Carroll, who's kind of loose and, you know, just kind of out there, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's the kind of college coach that can find a way to succeed in the NFL. Urban Meyer is very much an authoritarian. And people who know him predicted this is not going to end well for him. He's not built to win 9 of 17 football games. And that's in a winning season. And if that is true, and if there was a report that prefaced the firing of Clay Helton at USC that Urban Meyer wanted out already in Jacksonville, and there was, that would tell you that people are observing this. And that would also tell you that players around him might be looking at him going, coach isn't into this. There was who was the player that recently came out and ripped Urban Meyer? Said, listen, when I played for this cat, it's like he didn't even recognize his own football players. This guy said every conversation with Urban Meyer felt like the first time I had met him, that Urban never had any recollection of who this guy was. So that's, and so you know what kind of guy I'm talking about,
yeah,
in that situation.
Because I've experienced people like that. People that I've met 100 times, like, oh, good to meet you. Oh wait, we actually hung out not too long ago.
Do you work here?
I'm the worst at that too, though.
Nice
that
to see you.
I never say nice to meet you, and I never say good to see you again.
Just good to see you.
Good to see you.
That's the coaching move right there. Head coach I've ever met, good to see you.
Yeah. Right.
You could really go creepy on that and go, it's an honor to be in your presence. You got
to
say it like that too.
Looking at you.
Yeah, I'm real curious, even going
and
past.
And I'm bad with that, too. That's one of my blind spots.
That is one of the worst things about aging. Man, I used to be a steel trap when it came to names and faces. Oh, now it's just.
Now you're a rusted steel trap.
I am a rusted steel trap. I can't. I'm
good
remember.
At faces, but not names.
Faces, yes. I'm the same way.
Yeah.
But going back to Urban Meyer, I'm real curious, even past what happens this week, and I think the Cardinals will win this game, and we'll have a lot more in terms of preview on Thursday and Friday's show going into Jacksonville. Because I think there's going to be a lot of losing. Jacksonville is not a roster built to win. Mm-hmm. He knew that taking over, even with Trevor Lawrence in the mix. That was a team that had the number one overall pick, and it has not been a model franchise.
No.
If this is a 15-16 loss season for the Jaguars, even though Urban Meyer came out earlier and said, in shooting down the USC rumors, I'm here to help build something.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen him turn on a dime before, and that's when things were good.
Yeah, that is true.
I'm real curious to see how this whole thing shakes out.
Oh, you and me both. And so, again, this is a big opportunity for Cliff Kingsbury here because this is a team that has, under him, a struggle with prosperity. And this is one of those games that you should win and you better win and you better bring a football team that feels the same way. Because we didn't see that team in Carolina last year. You remember that?
No, that's true.
Mm-hmm.
And, that might it could be a turning point or symbolic of that being three games over 500 to start. I think they were three games over 500 once last year, and that was after they beat Buffalo. Let me double check that.
No, I think they were 5-2 and 6-3.
They were 5-2 and 6-3. So getting there without a loss would be symbolic. But also, again, two guys coming from the college ranks, and if you're a college coach, you have to acknowledge how great Urban Meyer was. To get a win over him at any level of football would be a feather in anybody's cap.
I think so. Yeah,
3-0 heading into the Rams game, though. Then get up, buckle your seat belts.
Yeah,
because
you put yourself in a position to really get a chunk of credibility and be the coach to finally beat Sean McVay.
Yeah.
So the next couple of weeks are great opportunity, an excellent opportunity. Tremendous.
I should tell that story at some point that I told you.
Yeah, I wish you would.
All right, coming up next, it's a Wednesday edition, an NFL-themed edition of Start, Sit, Cut, Bickley and Murata Mornings here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Bickley and Murata want to know, who would you start, sit, or cut?
All right, Jarrett has prepared some brilliance for us once again.
Once again.
It happened once in 2017.
And this is again.
And it's happening again. So exactly. That qualifies.
That's what it means.
All right, what do you got for us,
Jarrett? I'm going to give you three things. You have to tell me which ones you would metaphorically start, sit, and cut, essentially ranking them in order of most likely to happen based on the categories I'm giving you. And we'll start with the Cardinals. And we spend a lot of the offseason talking about three big storylines. Of these three big storylines, which turned out to be the most fruitless, the most nonsensical, and that we wasted the most time talking about, perhaps? The biggest non-issue, essentially. So start, sit, cut. Cliff Kingsbury's coaching ability. Chandler Jones' unhappiness. The Zaven Collins, Jordan Hicks linebacker, that stuff going on there.
What of those the
I'm,
most?
I'm having a hard time, grasping what you're asking.
Apparently, I threw out the brilliance term way too
a little prematurely. Okay,
so of
I'll
our
try, no, listen, I'll,
things that were the biggest concerns that we talked about could be a big storyline. Which turned out to be not really a storyline. Chandler Jones' unhappiness.
Mm-hmm.
The Zaven Collins, Zaven Collins starting and Jordan Hicks being unhappy. Or Cliff Kingsbury coming in on the hot seat and questions about his coaching.
All right, I'll start Jordan Hicks. I'll sit Chandler Jones because even though he's playing, he still hasn't been paid. So that issue is still there. And then I'll cut the Cliff Kingsbury coaching ability because there are still many, many questions to be
resolved. Can I go a step further and bend the rules of this game?
Sure.
I'm cutting all three because they're all three stories still.
Yeah.
I don't think any one of those is fruitless. I still have concerns about Chandler Jones. You said it. He hasn't been paid yet. What does that mean as the season goes on?
Yeah.
Zaven Collins is still a top 10 draft pick who was promised a starting job and isn't playing that much. And Cliff Kingsbury, he's made some slip-ups. I apologize for bending the rules,
Jared. That's okay. No, but you're absolutely right, though, because theoretically, what happens if Chandler Jones gets dinged up? How willing would he be then to play football?
Yeah, for sure. I don't mind bending the rules if it's accompanied with explanation like that.
Okay. I'm not answering that. That's
dumb.
Or
you could just write better questions.
That was an excellent question. I just didn't present it the best way that I could. Through 2 weeks of the season, I want you to give now predictions going forward. Most likely to happen, Kyler Murray wins MVP. Chandler Jones wins Defensive Player of the Year. Chandler Jones wins Comeback Player of the Year.
Ooh. I'm going to start Kyler wins the MVP.
Ooh. Yeah.
I'm going to sit Chandler Jones wins Comeback Player of the Year, and I'm going to cut Chandler Jones wins Defensive Player of the Year.
I'm going to start Chandler Jones winning Comeback Player of the Year. I'm going to sit Kyler Murray MVP. I'll cut Chandler Jones Defensive Player of the Year. My rationale for that would be, even though Kyler Murray's the front runner, the team's going to have to win for him to be the MVP. And I think Matthew Stafford, if he has a really, really good season, has got some inherent bias that will help him. So there you go.
All right.
But I do think he's a legit candidate. I'll say that much.
I take a look around the NFL, and I'm going to ask you, of these undefeated teams, of these teams that are currently 2-0, which do you have the most belief in that is actually a good team? Start, sit, cut. The Raiders, the Broncos, the Panthers.
I will start the Broncos, sit the Raiders, cut the Panthers.
I'm going to start the Panthers.
Ooh.
Because of what they're doing on defense, they've given up 252 yards or less in two games. I'm going to sit the Raiders, and I'm going to cut the Broncos.
Ooh.
Prove me wrong, Teddy.
All right.
Get the T-shirts printed up. Prove me wrong, right. Teddy.
On the other side of the ledger, these teams that are 0-2, most likely to get their first win this weekend. Start, sit, cut. The Colts, who are at the Titans. The Atlanta Falcons, who are at the New York Giants. The New York Giants, who host the Atlanta Falcons.
My turn to go first.
It is.
I'm going to start the Giants. I'm going to sit Indy, and I'm going to cut Atlanta.
Wow. I'm going to start the Giants. I'm going to sit the Falcons. How's that for hedging a bet? And I'm going to cut the Colts Titans.
Well, especially
if Jacob Eason is a quarterback.
Yeah, if Jacob Eason is. And also, the Titans looked like a totally different team.
Yes, in the second half. Yes, they did.
I mean, is Atlanta this bad? I mean,
yes.
Yeah.
Pretty soon, it's going to be a new era in Atlanta. Come on, Jared. Play with me here.
Huh?
It's going to be a new era in Atlanta.
The backup quarterback is...
Oh, I forgot. I didn't even put that together. Is he actually officially the second stringer?
He
played last week.
Josh Rosen.
Wouldn't that be unbelievable if the once and future king became the once and future king of Atlanta? A certain player known only throughout the entire NFL as...
Josh Rosen. Josh Rosen. Josh Rosen.
Josh Rosen played 6 snaps and he was 0-2.
Whoops.
With a quarterback rating of 39.6.
Well, that does sound like
Josh Rosen
to me.
All right. Didn't we have a question of whether or not once upon a time in social studies if he'd ever taken an NFL
for that
snap
man
again?
Is just fabulous, Jared.
I can't. That was when he got
let go,
cut by whoever he was previously
San Francisco.
And who would have thought it would have happened only a couple of weeks later? All right. Finally, I can't remember why, but we talked about the absolute deliciousness of a patty melt yesterday.
Uh-huh.
So I'm going to ask you best venues, not the best vehicle for a burger.
You can't read your writing.
Best vehicle for a burger?
That's right. Start, sit, cut. A patty melt.
Uh-huh.
A slide.
A car, a train, or a plane.
A patty melt, a slider. Or a regular old burger on a hamburger bun. Which do you enjoy the most?
Vic, you want to tackle this one first?
Yeah, I'll start. I will start regular burger on a bun, preferably a pretzel roll. I will sit the patty melt. I'll cut the sliders.
That is the correct answer.
I think so.
Sliders. Overrated.
Really?
I agree.
Overrated.
You think the bun to meat ratio is never that
well. They're so small, and if you get a slider with a good chunk of meat in it, then we're talking. But that's not usually.
But then
it's
not a slider.
That's true.
Right.
Well, give me a big.
Then it's just a mini regular old burger.
What is this? A burger for ants? That's what I think.
What are you giving me here?
Right.
Now I'm hungry. Thank you, Jared.
Yep.
We're again drive time. We're just breakfast drive time now.
And you eat burgers
breakfast
and such for
melt.
Breakfast. So there you go. There's this week's edition of Start, Sit, Cut. Coming up next, 400 yards, 4 touchdowns. That'll win you some awards. Kyler Murray could tell you all about it. He won another one today. That's straight ahead. It's Bickley and Murata Mornings, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Time to take a look at the Arizona Sports Poll Question. Brought to you by Sanderson Ford. The best play is at Sanderson Ford.
All right, welcome back to Bickley and Murata Mornings. 8:33 on this Wednesday morning. A Shenanigans Wednesday.
Yes.
As we like to call it on Bickley and Murata Mornings. Have there been enough shenanigans, though? I don't know.
Jarrett got called out for some operational shenanigans during Start, Sit, Cut on Twitter.
Okay.
Well, do tell.
A guy tweeted us and said he's yelling at his radio about how complicated your man rolls to start.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Thank you for your input. Would you like to produce our show, person on Twitter?
No, this is it. Look
at
this.
We can't get rid of Jared.
Quote,
I'm yelling at my radio at how complicated Jared is making the rules to start, sit, cut. Good Lord, he took 17 minutes to explain what everyone listening could have explained in about 9 seconds. Welcome.
It was a high concept. Give him a little bit of a break.
So the poll question is, what was that poll question?
So anyway,
is Jarrett making start, sit, cut too complicated? Yes or no?
Overwhelmingly, it is yes. Okay, ArizonaSports.com poll question today, looking at the Arizona Cardinals, asking who is their second best wide receiver after DeAndre Hopkins? AJ Green, Christian Kirk, or Rondale Moore?
I'm voting on what they've done to this point, not just this year, but in their careers.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm still giving a nod with some wishful thinking to AJ Green.
Okay.
I'm not.
I know you're not.
A little nudgy nudge.
Yeah.
Let's go. Wake up.
Yeah. I think it's between Rondale Moore and Christian Kirk, and I think that's a tough one for me to decipher. But I'll let you vote. Go ahead and cast the vote for AJ Green.
Okay. AJ Green.
Thanks, Bick. I got you, AJ.
Oh, it's a good thing that you voted for AJ
because
someone had to. 44% of the vote going to Rondale Moore. 42% for Christian Kirk. 15% for the veteran AJ Green.
All right. All those guys have touchdowns so far.
There we go.
Has the makings of a devastating receiving core. We can agree on that, right?
What was the joke you put out there on Rondale Moore on Twitter on Sunday?
It was on the broken play where he caught it. He was wide open and he outran everyone for the touchdown. I said, going, gone, Del Moore. Was that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
That brilliance?
that
brilliant wordplay?
Yeah. You know Luke Lipinski, but that's not bad.
Ouch. Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you.
I'm coming at you, Carlin.
Before we even went on the air this morning at 6 a.m., 5:31 a.m., the email comes out from the Arizona Cardinals that quarterback Kyler Murray, once again, the NFC Offensive Player of the Week. A week ago at this time, we were having the discussions on whether or not Matthew Stafford deserved that weekly award over Kyler Murray. I didn't have that huge a problem with it, but to Kyler Murray's credit, in a lot of ways, he upped his output. Now, the two picks were a little bit concerning, and you can walk away from that win if you're a Cardinal fan thinking, okay, they got away with two bad picks. Other than that, Kyler Murray was absolutely brilliant. 400 yards, three touchdowns, ran for another. The games where he's getting a touchdown pass and a touchdown run are becoming so commonplace, it's almost not even noteworthy anymore.
What I think is really noteworthy about this and what I think is really cool about this is we're looking at Kyler Murray right now, and he is looking every bit like the quarterback we had hoped he would be when he was drafted in Nashville, number one overall. But the journey to get to this point has been anything but smooth. There's been a lot of ups and a lot of downs. There's been questions. There's been his body language. There's been his kind of like weird interfacing with the media coming into this year. There was the Larry Fitzgerald dynamic. And if you can't get along with Fitz, who can? My point is this. I made the point coming into this season that Kyler Murray, at this point, people were mixed in how they feel about him. Coming into the year, you could find Cardinal fans who didn't like him all that much, didn't dig his vibe, weren't convinced he could do this, weren't convinced he was tall enough to play the position. I had questions about his leadership ability, all of that kind of stuff. What we're seeing now from him has been so mature that the whole falling in love with this guy is going to happen. Suns fans fell in love with Devin Booker long before the Suns got good.
True.
Okay? That hasn't been the case with Kyler Murray up till now. There's been a lot of suspicion about, does this guy love football? Is he committed to football? Is he committed to Arizona? Can he be a good leader? Can he relate to people? All that kind of stuff. And he's answered all those questions. So now that love thing is going to happen, and I can't wait to see what this looks like.
Yeah, I mean, through two games, we've seen it. People that were asking for growth from Kyler Murray, and not just becoming, I mean, we've known he's dynamic, but in becoming an NFL quarterback, a leader, a field general, in addition to being that devastating playmaker, We've seen it through two games. Aqib Talib was in the Fox booth last week against Minnesota. He and Gus Johnson are doing the game again on Sunday in Jacksonville. So, you know, he's watched a lot of Kyler Murray, and he was on the Rich Eisen show. And Aqib Talib talked about, you know, if you need a quarterback to win a football game for you, he would take Kyler Murray. Here's why.
You need to win a football game in the NFC West in week three. Let's just say it, okay? Which quarterback do you want on that field right now, Aqib Talib, in the NFC West?
That's a tough question, Rich, but I'm going to go Kyler right now. I'm going to go Kyler.
Really?
Give me Kyler right now. Yeah.
Why?
He could dominate a game like by himself almost. I mean, he's like unsackable. I mean, he gets sacked, but I think he gets sacked when he really waiting for a route to clear, and then he just try to get up out of there a little bit late. But man, he hard to stop. His pocket awareness, his arm talent is as good as the pocket passers, right? No one questions his arm talent at all. He hasn't had like the Lamar stuff about can he throw on the outside. He never had to deal with any of that. But his pocket presence and his leg talent is just as talented as anybody in the NFL. He can escape and keep his eyes downfield like Russell, or he can get out of there and run like Lamar. So I feel like he kind of both of them put together. Plus he could throw like the Lawrence. I mean, he's a total package. So I'm taking Kyler.
That's an interesting pick. It's a great debate.
It really is. I love what we were talking about earlier when the big difference is the scrambling now and keeping his eyes downfield. I said that, and you mentioned that's what he means when he says he sees everything. And that's a real good way to tie together what is obviously one of the quantifiable and obvious changes in his game. And it's devastating to other teams. He's become a nightmare of a headache. How's that for mixing a couple of things?
Nightmare of a headache.
Nightmare of a headache.
Get this man some Advil.
Is that a good band name?
Nightmare headache?
You know, I've heard Gambo say many, many times that Kyler Murray's in line for $40 million. He is, if this continues, and he really is an MVP, the money he is going to make from being a national endorser is going to be staggering. Because of a lot of different reasons, because of the excitement, the role model, all that kind of stuff. I looked up at the television about a half hour ago, and there he was doing a commercial. He was in a grocery store. He was at a deli counter. And by the way,
yeah, I saw that too, but I saw it with the sound down. I don't know what it's for.
I wasn't sure either. By the way, Jarrett, that's one of my favorite things in the world is going to the deli counter.
Mm.
That's my jam.
Oh, you just bonded with Jared.
I did. Yeah. Can I get a half pound of pastrami, please, and half pound of that cracked pepper turkey breast?
Cut it thin, and let me try a slice before you put it.
They don't do the samples anymore.
Yeah,
I haven't been in a grocery store
COVID
in a year
casualty.
And a half, so
they don't do it anymore.
This morning, DeAndre Hopkins was on a commercial.
Really?
For the Therabody thing, that new thing where you use to kind of roll out your muscles after workout. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So it's happening.
Wait, you're supposed to do that after a workout? I have a massage gun, but I haven't worked out since 1986. Mine's just because I slept weird.
That is excellent. That is so on brand. That's
perfect. Kyler Murray, your offensive player of the week in the NFC. Maybe should have won it last week. We could be talking about a two-time winner had the voting gone a little bit differently last week.
Think about that.
You can text your thoughts on it to the FanDuel text line at 620-620 right now. Coming up next, Diamondbacks continue losing. They got another game against the Braves tonight. Our D-backs front office focus is next with assistant GM Mike Fitzgerald. It's Bickley and Marotta Mornings, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
The home of Arizona Diamondbacks baseball. 98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station. Diamondbacks front office focus.
Bickley and Marotta Mornings continues here live from the Auction Community Studios. Also continuing is the series between the Arizona Diamondbacks and the Atlanta Braves. Tonight, game 3 of 4 at Chase Field as the Diamondbacks try to break through in that series. And here for Front Office Focus this week, Assistant GM Mike Fitzgerald joins us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Mike, thanks for the time. How are you?
Good morning, guys. We're doing all right. We're grinding.
That's a word that's been used a lot this year, and obviously it's one of those years where things just did not go your way. 11 games left at this point. And Bick and I were talking about it, and a lot of Diamondbacks fans are talking about it. But from a front office perspective, I mean, what are some of the adjectives you could use to describe this year?
Yeah, frustrating is definitely one of them. I think the amount of time and effort and energy that a lot of different people put into trying to put a product together that people enjoy coming to see, that plays competitive games, and then obviously to see it pan out the way it does. There's a lot of us taking that personally, right? We are super frustrated, but at the same time, we want to be focused on solutions, right? It's important to identify what the correct problems are and what the areas of focus need to be to help us get back to being competitive. But you know, just highlighting the issues and not putting our heads together to make sure that we figure out solutions moving forward to right this ship and get the different leaks that have shown up plugged and get us back to being a functional, aggressively competitive team. That's kind of where everybody's head's at. And yeah, there's 11 games left. On the surface, I guess it doesn't feel like there's a ton of opportunity to shift mindsets, but there's 11 opportunities for guys to go out there and start making movements back towards the areas that we think they need to be able to sustain for us to be a consistently competitive team. And so, our mindset is to continue to hold guys accountable to moving that needle back to the direction that we all want to get to.
Yeah,
and obviously, obviously it's going to end with a bad taste in our mouth, even if these final 11 move those needle to a degree. But we need to make sure we're working towards that.
Yeah, it feels like we're miles away from that last really fun playoff run that we had here in the Valley. If you had to describe where this whole thing is going, what is the plan to get back to being a competitive playoff team in the National League West? How would you verbalize that plan to Diamondbacks fans?
Sure. So I grew up in a football household, right? So one of the things that we're always talked about a lot is, the three facets of the game. Defense, offense, special teams, and the importance of winning two out of three of those on a nightly basis, right? So we kind of look through similar things in the baseball end and starting pitching, giving you a chance to win a game, defense, picking up the ball and protecting it, having a bullpen that's going to close down leads for you in the back end, and then creating and cashing in on run scoring opportunities. And, it might sound simple, but those are the four key areas that we need to continue to push the ball forward in. Part of the starting pitching thing was injury related, but we've had a fairly consistent group over this back stretch in the second half of the season. And, there's still opportunities for those guys to improve and push the ball forward. Defensively, I think thinking back to that 17 year, one of the things was that we did really well was that we knew when we'd go to bed at night, Torrey talked about this a lot, Hayes has talked about this a lot, the confidence level that we were going to pick the baseball up, protect it, and not make the game more than 27 outs. We haven't done that very well this year. Obviously, the bullpen has been what the bullpen is, particularly late in games. That's probably one of the biggest areas from an emotional standpoint, losing a game late, one that you had a hold of. For as much as we want to be able to shower that off and turn the page, that one stings and lingers a little bit. And so making sure that we are rethinking the ways in which we can put together a solid bullpen and protect the back end of games. And then for creating and cashing in and run scoring opportunities. I think we've done a solid job at the first part of that, creating opportunities. We're top five in the league and played appearances with runners in scoring position. Now we got to figure out a way to generate that, translate that into generating more runs. Like we were saying earlier, if we can find ways to win three out of those four on a nightly basis, we're going to put ourselves in a decent chance to be competitive.
Mike Fitzgerald, our guest here on D-backs Front Office Focus. Obviously, most of the attention goes on to the big league club, but if there's a reason for optimism, Mike, as you know, I mean, the farm system has been rebuilt by the front office, headed up by Mike Hazen, and you guys have done a good job in recognizing and developing talent. I mean, the year on the farm for the Arizona Diamondbacks organization, how would you characterize it?
Yeah, still bittersweet to a degree, right? There's some guys that we were excited to see them go out and play, and then injuries popped up and kept them, but on the whole, agree. From August 1st on, the two best OPSs from an offensive standpoint in minor league baseball were our AAA and AA teams. And we weren't just kind of stacking those kind of somehow how other teams may. We were the sixth youngest team in AA and the sixth youngest team in AAA this year. So definitely constantly trying to, you know, focus on the development of those guys. And you know, at the same time, we're not sitting here thinking it just becomes easy to plug and play those guys, right? We've seen Dalton Varsho's had, you know, one of the better second halves of any offensive player in baseball at the major league level. And we saw, you know, the grind and the struggle that he went through in adjusting to his, transitioning from the minor leagues to the big league. So we're not ignorant of the transition that we're going to see with those guys, but we're optimistic that with having a large group of those position players consistently performing, that you know we're gonna be able to get some of those guys up here and watch them continue to flourish and perform as they have in the minor leagues. And then on the pitching side, there's the Amarillo rotation got a lot of attention. The Nelsons of the world, the Fats, the Jamesons. It's the Jarvises. It was exciting to see those guys go out and pitch. And then even below that with kind of the younger group that we have with the Walsons, the Elbuses. So, yeah, there's a group there that's intriguing. And, you know, our whole strategy with all of this has been let's try to get as much talent as we can and then see how the cream rises to the crop and create an environment where these guys are supported and challenged and see how good they can get.
On Dalton Varsho, you're exactly right. He's had a great second half. The numbers say that. One of his calling cards has always been versatility and athleticism. As he develops, do you see him, Mike, as a guy who's going to have more of an everyday position, or do you think the organization will continue to lean on versatility moving forward?
I think it'll be a case-by-case basis, right? We've obviously talked a lot about versatility, and we see value. There's tremendous value in having a guy that Torrey can write in the lineup. To catch one night and then go play center or a corner outfield spot the next night. But at the same time, we want to make sure we're putting Dalton and any individual in this question in the best position to be successful and at their peak performance night in and night out. So, individualized to a degree for Dalton's specific situation, I think we'll probably still see a little bit of both. I think he enjoys kind of having that bouncing around and back and forth and different games within the game. But yeah, I think on an individual level, there'll be some guys that we probably peel back from that a little bit and say, hey, you know what, we're going to try to get you to be really, really solid at this position, and then we'll talk from there.
Mike, thanks so much for the time this morning. We really appreciate it.
You got it, guys. Take care.
Thank you, Mike Fitzgerald, Assistant GM, Vice President with the Arizona Diamondbacks, our guest on D-backs Front Office Focus. Coming up next, 9 o'clock is here. Sarah Cazell returns to take us through social studies next. It's Bickley and Marotta Mornings, live from the Ak-Chin Community Studios, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
You've been listening to D-backs Front Office Focus.